Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm an addict, and thank you for asking me to share. And I'm glad it's a nice little meeting. So that's all wonderful. It's really hard. I haven't been to a meeting for about a week, and just getting my head around, the reading. And when you didn't do the reading, I was like, oh shit. Sorry, I'm probably not meant to swear either if you're recording it. Anyway, just getting myself centered and calm and into the right, I work as a photographer and it's all kicking off and in some work related thing. And so it's just sort of calming myself. I'm in the meeting, in the room, I'm a recovering addict here, telling my story, my experience, strength and hope. I don't need to worry about what's going on all around me. It's just calming right down. So I'm not naturally calm. Anyway, thank you, like I said, for asking me, and lovely to be here. And so what is my story? My story is I was born into a family of an alcoholic father and a codependent lunatic of a mother. And from a very, very young age, I don't ever remember feeling safe. I don't remember feeling like anybody cared. I don't remember feeling like anyone had my back. I remember feeling that everything was down to me, and I had to make things happen, or, I wasn't going to survive. And, very, very young, I realized that, I thought, well, they can't kill me, so they can basically fuck off. And so it's just fight with everyone. I fought with people at school. I was in trouble from, again, very young age for causing trouble. I was one of those people that was never asked back for anything. I never won a prize. I was expelled from school at 15 with one O-level, and that was it. I rebelled against absolutely everything. My favorite book was a book called Go Ask Alice, which was about a girl who took too much acid and ended up in a cupboard. And I remember all about it, but anyway, it wasn't good. Christiana F. I wasn't aware that everything that I liked was to do with drugs, but and again, I grew up in the countryside, and we would try and smoke bracken, and we would try and smoke nutmeg or walnut, because everyone said you got off your tits on that, and never really worked, felt sick. And then Disprin and Coca-Cola was meant to get you stoned. I mean, you name it, we tried it. We grew our own grass. I was looking for out. I started drinking quite young. I thought the only way to drink was drink until you passed out. I didn't think that there was any other way. It was never sociable. It was never convivial, as they call it. It was always about getting out of it. But drink never worked for me, because by the time I got to the place where I was feeling nothing, I was vomiting or passing out. So it wasn't really functional, as they say. So thrown out of school, thrown out of colleges, just thrown out of everywhere, basically. 17 years old, trying to live in London, living in my parents' house and being thrown out of there, living in on people's sofa. I mean, my life was just a disaster area. I mean, forget, I'm not telling you about the drugs in a minute, just how I was as a person. I didn't know how to relate to anyone. I didn't know how to be part of a team. I didn't know how to be part of a household. If I lived in your house, I would steal things from you. I'd borrow your clothes. I'd allow unsuitable people in. I didn't care what you said. And I did care what you thought about me. So I just hated you if you disapproved of me. But I didn't, not enough that I wanted to change who I was. I needed you to change, basically. Anyway, and I started with smoking dope, taking coke. Every drug I took, I tore the ass out of. I moved in with the coke dealer. I was working for him, used until I could use no more. And that whole, everything about that relationship disintegrated, obviously, because they weren't really relationships. They were hostage situations. I mean, it just was bad energy always. And then I thought, well, okay, the problem is obviously the coke and the person. So what I really need is a straight person who only drinks. And then I drank until I was about 25 sizes bigger than I was with my coke habit. And I thought, okay, the problem is England, so I better go abroad. And I went and met a friend, and she was taking smack, and we were in Thailand, we were taking heroin, and blah, blah, blah. And so it went on. I got to the age of 23 and I realized I couldn't go on. I realized I had three options. I could kill myself. I could carry on using, because the anesthetic to my life was not enough, and I needed more. And or I could I could stop using. And I had been to NA meetings. I think when I was 21, I went to my first meeting, and there was a guy in there, and he was there with his dog. And he said that he'd been to be in a video and for a pop promo thing, and they hadn't used him, and they hadn't used his dog. So not only was he not good enough, but his dog was a piece of shit too. And that resonated with me, weirdly. Why, I have no idea. But anyway, the coke dealer boyfriend, he'd got clean. And the last time I'd seen him, he was super fucked. And I saw him in the street and he was clean, and he said he was going to NA. And he said, you know, you could come. And I said, fuck you. You know, I hated him by the end anyway. So it wasn't, anyway, he'd got clean. So he was like a year clean when I'd seen him. And a couple of years later, more and more trouble, more and more, you know, unemployable. I mean, I used to go, it was sort of the 80s, and they did this thing, you could do this thing called temping. So you do like a day or whatever. And I was being sacked from, I'd only been there an hour, you know, I'd arrive off my tits, you know, using their telephone. I thought a job was somewhere you went to use a telephone and do what you, you know, and sort of make calls and sort your life out. The concept of going and giving of myself and doing actually a job was just beyond me. I mean, I lived in this completely sort of different universe to the rest of the people that I came into contact with. And, you know, the agency would ring me up and say, they need you to leave. They need you to leave the building. And I'd be like, why the fuck do they want me to leave? And they'd say, well, because they think you're weird. Ah, they got weird, you know, sunglasses on, typing, smoking, shouting. I mean, I was batshit crazy. Anyway, 23 years old. I don't want to talk too much about all that craziness. You know what that's all about. You know how to do crazy. And it was the getting clean that was the is more interesting, really. And 23 years old, okay, so those are my three options. I never had the guts to kill myself, whether it's guts or whatever it is, I didn't, but it was definitely, it was an option on the table if the other two didn't work. And I thought, okay, well, I didn't believe in alcohol, really, because my dad was a drunk and it wasn't working for him, and I didn't like it anyway, and it never worked for me. And, you know, and I didn't believe in more using. My friend that I was using smack with, he died trying to get clean, in fact, and just everything imploded. Anyway, I thought, okay, fine, I'll go to the fucking meeting. And it won't work, by the way. It definitely won't work. It'll be full of wankers and people who, you know, if I won't meet anyone, I won't be, you know, I won't, if I meet some man, it'll probably be some twat that cleans his car at the weekend. I mean, it's going to be, so this is the positive way with which I entered. It won't work. You won't, you know, you won't, well, they won't want you. You weren't a proper, you didn't use a needle. So, you know, smoking smack is for pussies. You know, you don't belong. You won't, it won't work. You know, the things that I told myself, other people who I said, I'm going to go and get clean, were like, amazing, go for it, you don't deserve to, you know, you deserve it. Well, I told myself was, you're a piece of shit and it's never going to work for you, and they're not going to want you anyway, so I don't know why you're bothering. Anyway, I ignored that and went to my first meeting and put my hand up for a white keyring, and they clapped, and I cried like a baby, because I'd never done anything that anyone had ever clapped me for ever in my life. Literally nothing. I don't think I'd even ever got an A in a school fit. I mean, literally nothing. Anyway, I was kind of blown away by that feeling, really touched me. I mean, it was really powerful, that feeling of, yeah, you know what, well done, and keep coming back again, keep coming back. Miraculous. No one had told me to come back anywhere. It was like, get out, go away, stop it, leave us alone, get lost. Anyway, so they say, keep coming back, do 90 meetings in 90 days and get yourself a sponsor and work the steps. I heard 90 meetings in 90 days. I heard that, got that. I heard the programs are fixed, and by the time you get to step 12, it'll be like a really good high, and everything's going to be great. So I got the sponsor and I'm like, okay, let's do the steps. Cause, you know, obviously I needed to get to step 12 because I wanted to feel good. And I knew that was where the sort of the holy grail was. And she kept saying really weird things like, this is a process, it's not about being fixed. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just thought she was trying to stop me getting my high, you know, just trying to get in the way. And I found things like, I found things like identifying really confusing, because I then think, who told them that I feel like that? And I think someone that I knew in the room had said to the person, I'm so self-obsessed and so self-centered. I was telling a friend earlier that I remember someone sharing that they'd been burgled. And I thought, I just know they think that was me that did the burgling. I just know they did. I mean, I hadn't done it. I didn't even know them. I knew where they lived. But I was so self-obsessed that when anything like that ever happened, I think, oh, fuck, they think it's me. They think it's me. They think it's me that did the burgling. Anyway, so yeah, super self-obsessed. And yeah, I mean, you take a drug crazy lunatic and take away the drug, you've still got a crazy lunatic. And boy, well, 60 days in, of course, I think it's time for me to take back the reins and start sorting shit out, because really it was time to get on with, you know, because my life had been such a mess and there was so much shame about my lack of achievement and everything. I thought, well, boyfriend, you know, was that, you know, and I sort of got obsessed with this guy. And I thought, well, you have to be honest with your feelings, so I better let him know how I feel. So I sort of rang him up and, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I've got this obsession with you and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, okay, let's have a coffee, shall we? Anyway, I was then so freaked out. I mean, straight kind of interactions was just whoa, way beyond me. Anyway, so I went for a coffee, but I was so scared I took all these friends with me. And anyway, this started a whole dance of God knows what. Anyway, I mean, long story, I'm not going to talk about that particularly, but basically I ended up marrying him and I've got three kids with him and we're still together and it's great, but it's not been an easy journey. And it was, I definitely hid behind my relationship with him that didn't enable me to make friends, and it, and I hid in it for lots of different ways. But also it was very positive because I actually, he had a sponsor, he worked a program, he wasn't codependent around me, and I wanted to stay with him. And sometimes I think if he'd used, I would have used, because I was in such a mad space in those times, I would have probably used myself. But he stayed clean and he sort of, in a way, showed me the way. And I'd never tell him that. I'd never, if he was here, I certainly wouldn't be saying that. But, it was, I could see how it worked for him, and I knew it wasn't easy. And you know, so it had its real positive benefits, and I'm sure it had its not so positive benefits, but we are still together. We're very happy together. So, you know, it's a long time. I mean, I'm clearly not 24, so, you know, it was quite a long time ago. Anyway, so that sort of started. So I suppose the next 10 years I spent with Vanessa trying to fix it. So Vanessa thought, right, what does Vanessa need? Forget handing it over to a higher power. I mean, I was doing the steps and working with different sponsors. And basically, I don't want to bang on about it, but 8 sponsors later and 10 years into recovery, I am broken. I am like, fucked. I can't do this anymore. Vanessa, you know, I hadn't really got to the point of, you know, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction and that our lives were unmanageable. Hadn't gone in. I mean, I thought, we admitted we were powerless and then we sorted it all out. Well, if we couldn't sort it all out in the first place, why did I, you know? So anyway, and I remember asking sponsor number 9, who's still my sponsor, would you sponsor me? I think I need some help. And she was like, yeah, I can see you've been unhappy for a really long time, which I thought was a bit rude, harsh, because I thought I'd made quite a good show. You know, the boyfriend had become the husband, we'd moved house, we got children, we got more children. You know, I'd made it all look really good, hadn't I? And I was saying the right things, wasn't I? And I was doing service, wasn't I? And judging everyone and angry with everyone and just a pain in the ass. Anyway, so we started back at step one. I admitted that I was powerless over my addiction, that my life was unmanageable, that up here was so crazy that I needed a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. And I admitted that, and it was just like, hands up, okay, I can't do this anymore. It doesn't matter how the outside looks, it's how the inside feels, and the inside felt bad. You know, all that hatred, all that judgment, all that, you know, and I'd done three or four steps by then. But, you know, it'd all been about how wrong I was and not really about a positive, negative inventory. And, you know, and then step 3, and that what it meant to hand my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. And for me, it meant carrying on with the program. And, you know, and I do say my prayers intermittently, I'd like to say, because I can't tell you I do it every day. I don't. But so when I get on my knees, I get on my knees and I look out of the window and I look at nature and I look at the green and I look at this power that can make so many colors of green. It's quite ridiculous. And I just think, you know what, if you can do that, you can take my will and my life and you can guide me and you can show me how to live. And nowadays, I pray for that. She always talked to me about it. My sponsor, it's always been about the spiritual principles, you know, about honesty. I mean, that was a really hard one, but I'll tell you about that in a minute. Open-mindedness, willingness, courage. Those are the things that I pray for. And Yeah, because in early recovery, just quickly, I couldn't change my behavior. I didn't change my behavior. I was working for a friend of mine, gave me a job in his restaurant, and I was stealing from him. I mean, I thought I was just stealing from customers that I didn't know, so it was fine. That was my justification. But I was adding stuff on the end of the bill, and I was so pleased. I thought, oh, so clever. I found a whole new sort of income line. And I remember a friend in recovery saying, but that's stealing. I said, no, it's not, because I don't know them. She's like, it doesn't matter if you don't know them, it's still stealing. You know, that's the kind of mentality I had. Anyway, so 10 years on, not been going well. Even though lots of life things had happened to me that were great, there was somewhere inside I knew it wasn't all okay. Anyway, and we did this four step, we did the columns, we did we did it all, we laid it all out, 700 different people that I resented the fuck out of, and including myself and my husband and my children, you know, all the people that I love, you know. And I wrote this inventory, and I had a column which said, you know, what decision based on self placed me in a position to be hurt. And basically the self-centered decision is, I'm not good enough. I think you found out, and I fucking hate you, and I hate myself, basically. And if I make that decision every time, you know, in 700 different scenarios, I'm not going to feel good about myself. And, you know, and then the assets and the, you know, realizing that I'm not all bad, you know. Yeah, I did some bad things and I behaved in some bad ways, but I'm not all bad. I'm just a human being. And, you know, we're understanding so much more now, and, you know, with all the stuff around trauma and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I can really, really be gentle with myself, and really, really understanding that the self-talk is just, is not okay, that, you know, that I don't deserve that. I wouldn't talk to anybody else like that, well, unless I was angry, but anyway, mostly I wouldn't talk to anybody else like that, so why do I talk to myself like that? And then step six and seven, which are beautiful steps. I mean, really, really becoming entirely ready, very, very painful, what can I say, very painful. But I did. I became entirely ready to be a human being, good, bad, and indifferent. You know, and if I can be a human being, I can let you be a human being. And then suddenly, I don't have to carry all these resentments anymore. I'm free. You can make mistakes. I can make mistakes, and it's okay. And that's been pretty life changing, really. And then, you know, made a list of amends, and I have made a list of amends, and some of which I've made, some of which I haven't. What, the restaurant guy, I haven't made amends to him. He's on the list, and I share about it every time. And he's really scary. He's really successful and not very sort of nurturing. And I'm just terrified that if I, you know, anyway. I pray for the willingness. I don't know when it will come, and I don't know when the situation will offer itself, but I do pray for the willingness. And what, pretty much everybody else, apart from my mother, I haven't made amends to her. I don't know how to. Again, praying for the willingness. It's okay. There's no rush. It's okay. The living amend is, she's in my life. We see her, you know, she's just very toxic, and I'm very frightened of her. So if I'm truthful, so, and probably if I made the amend, it would all be absolutely fine, but I'm frightened of it. So anyway, so that's on the prayer list, and that has to, you know, that will, again, who knows, but that's okay. You know, as and when. And I have sponsees, so, and I work through the steps with them, which is such a gift, because it means I go back through the steps again, and they are so wise, and they come up with things I'd never even have thought of, and I learn so much from them. So I'm very grateful to have sponsees as well. And then steps 10, you know, that continuing to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Not so easy, but anyway, it feels so much better to admit it and clear the air. I don't like living with bad energy. I really don't. So I'm very willing, and a lot of times step 10 stops me from making a scene or behaving bad, because I think, oh, do you know what, I really don't want to have to sort of admit I'm wrong to that person. I much prefer to keep my mouth shut and not, you know, get into a situation. So it helps me that on a daily basis, that step. Step 11, well, through prayer and meditation. Meditation, not good at meditation. I find exercise meditative. I find walking meditative. I'm not very good at sitting still with the shanti shanti. My husband's very good at that. I watch him, he's brilliant, and he does his meditation, and he's very, very chilled. I put that down to him being a pure heroin addict, because they're much lazier. you know, they don't want to do so much naturally. So I put that down to that. And that's what he reckons. Because when I go to an early morning meeting, he's like, are you nuts? Who gets up at 7:30 to go to a meeting? Well, probably a coke addict. And I mean, for him, his idea, an early morning meeting is at 1 o'clock, lunchtime. That's a bit early. But anyway, so he's very good at that. I'm not so good at the meditating, but I am good at being out in nature. I'm good at that sort of, that's how I do my prayer and meditation. And you know, in step 12 and carrying the message and, you know, practicing these principles in all my affairs. It's all practice. I simply haven't got it right yet. I just practice these principles in all my affairs. And sometimes I forget them. Sometimes I don't do it very well. Sometimes I do have to make amends. Sometimes I do have to admit I'm wrong. But I'm just, you know, I'm work in progress, as they say. And I love this program. I mean, it's a structure for life that is absolutely brilliant. There is nothing like it. It is life-changing. I'm so lucky that I found this and that I stick with it long enough to really see its benefits and see how it changes my life, changes other people's lives. I mean, I do service and I love the area a lot. That's how I met Maria. And you know, and you hear what H&I do, what PI do, and I've been into prisons. I used to go to Holloway. And it's such a privilege to be able to go and try and carry the message. I mean, Holloway was in the detox unit, so they're all off their heads and hear anything, but they were sweet and cuddly. It was just nice to be there with them and have a non-judgmental conversation with the girls that were there. And, you know, it was a bit of a privilege. And so doing service is vital for carrying the message, et cetera, et cetera. So that's part of what I still do. And it was my birthday last week, so it was 32 years, I think so. 1989, is that 32 years? I think it is. And I couldn't keep telling lies. Oh, 34 or 30, no, I think it's 32. And the best 32 years I could have spent, really. So I will stop before 5 minutes, I think, Bex. But I can't recommend it highly enough, but I think you probably all know that. It's really... It's the thing. It's the business, really. I hope that's made sense to somebody. I'm sorry if I talk too quickly or too sort of hysterically. But yeah, I'm deeply grateful for Narcotics Anonymous because it's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. Thank you.